Good morning. As has already been stated this morning by Keith and our welcome, we are glad that you have taken the time to be with us this morning here in person, or those of you who have joined us online. As a church, we are trying to be the kind of congregation that glorifies God in everything that we do. We believe and understand that He has called us to great and glorious task in His work and His kingdom, and it is a privilege. It is an honor to be able to serve a Lord who loves us so much. Amen. And we encourage you to find a way to get plugged in, whether it's here at Northeast or to find another congregation in your location where you can get involved and dig in and be a part of things. It's one of the aims that we have as a church. One of our mottos is to grow deeper. We want to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. But we also want to grow deeper in the faith. And so one of the avenues that we have been using for over two decades to do that very thing is through our life group program. You noted last week we began our sign-ups for our life groups. Those are small groups that meet together, many of them in homes, some in other places in the church building, and other opportunities where we can gather together in smaller groups, that we can share life, that we can encourage each other, that we can learn more about Jesus. And yesterday I sent an email that most of you should have received, and there is a link right on that email that I sent you yesterday. If you click on that link, it will take you to our life group page. They're on our website, and there you can click on the I want to join a group, and you can do it that way. It's just that easy. And we want to encourage all of our people to participate in that. You may be feeling a little bit, I don't know, like I've never done anything like that before. I might be a little uncomfortable. But trust me, you won't be sorry that you signed up and participated in this program to help you get to know people and just build relationships in Jesus. We have been talking about, in the last couple of weeks, the questions that Jesus asked. We've called this little mini-series Q&A with Jesus. And yet, we've been talking more about questions than we've been talking about answers. Now, Jesus had answers. Jesus made a lot of statements. But Jesus also asked a bunch of questions. Somebody told it up, and I think some of you may remember the number, 307 questions in the gospel accounts that Jesus asked. And he didn't just ask those questions to get information. He wasn't doing it just to carry on a casual conversation. The questions of Jesus dig deep into our hearts and lives. And I suggested in my first lesson to take some of those questions of Jesus, to take those deep, important questions and just chew on those for a day. Use that in your devotional life. Take one question of Jesus and think about it. Focus on it. Meditate on it the entire day or an entire week. And this is what you're going to discover. When you spend more time with Jesus and you pay attention to what he says and you take it personally and you let it penetrate your heart, you're not going to be the same person. He's going to change you inside out. The more time you spend with Jesus in his word, in his life, in everything that he is, he's going to transform you step by step and bit by bit as you trust him. And that's an exciting thing. We've been talking about some questions, just a quick review here. The main question that we looked at with our first sermon was the question, what do you want? That's the question that he asked his disciples right off the bat, the first time he met them. And so that question speaks to the issue of, you know, why do I live? Why do I exist? What's the purpose of my life? What am I doing? Do you ever think about things like that? What does God want me to do? What am I seeking? What are the most important things in life? Who am I really? Why am I here? What purpose am I serving? If we don't grasp that question and grapple with the answer to that question, we're not going to be able to deal with all the other questions that are just as important as that one. And then last week, we looked at the importance of how Jesus views us, that He has a personal love and care and concern for you and for me. He knows our name. And so when He asked Legion what his name was, He said, "My name is Legion," but we noted last week that wasn't who He was. That wasn't His real, true core identity. Jesus is concerned about you as a person. He knows everything about you, and He loves you. And He's also concerned about how we view other people. How do you look at others? Do you view them simply as objects or numbers or pawns to be used in your own life or your own selfish ends? Or do you try to view people, when Jesus asked that question to Simon the Pharisee, do you see this woman? Are we seeing people and striving to see people the way Jesus sees people? Because when I look at you and you look at me, we should be seeing somebody who is precious, somebody who is treasured, somebody who is loved, somebody who is created in the image of God, somebody who has inherent worth because of who created them, who created you, and yet that image has been marred and tainted and stained by our sin and our selfishness. And yet God calls us to continue to grow in seeing ourselves and others as we would see them. Now we're going to look at a different question this morning, and it comes from a passage in Mark 6 from our reading this morning. And in that context, we have Jesus. He's busy. He's healing people. He's teaching. And finally, Jesus says, let's get away. Let's get away to a quiet place. We need some rest. We need to get something to eat. And people were just following Him everywhere. They went in a boat. They went to one side of the lake. And some of the people who were in this position walked along the shore till they could find Jesus where He and the disciples had landed. I mean, it was like they couldn't get away for a minute. And yet we're told that Jesus looked at those crowds and He had compassion on them. They were like sheep without a shepherd. And so Jesus took the time. He taught them. He spoke to them. He encouraged them. He challenged them in the words that He spoke. But the day went on. It got late. And the disciples thought, well, listen, it's late. We're tired. They're tired. Everybody's tired. We're done. It's time to, church has gone on long enough here. It's time to go. And Jesus says to them, when they say, let's send them off somewhere to get something to eat, Jesus says, you give them something to eat. You give them something to eat. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? I think one thing that Jesus is doing here, he's beginning to kind of draw them into what's going to happen, and He's drawing them in to partner with Him and work with Him in what they can do for others in this given situation. And obviously, what they're thinking is, we can't do it. That would take almost a half of year's wages. Are we going to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? And so the answer is to this statement, or the response to this statement is, we can't do it. It's impossible. We don't have enough. I don't know how you feel when you're preparing a meal. Maybe it's a meal for guests and you're having them over. What are one of the main concerns you have when you're preparing a meal? Do you have enough, right? You don't want to invite somebody into your home and then run out of food. That would just be almost, you know, that would be rude, right? Invite them over and not have enough to eat. I remember how Jeannie's mom, and we called her Nanny, and Jeannie is called Nanny just like her mother was called Nanny. But Nanny would invite anybody who happened to come by, who was close by when she was preparing a meal. That kitchen was open. So if the guy from the county who's working with the cattle happened to be there that day, or the veterinarian with his assistant, Mary Farah would always invite them to lunch or dinner. But sometimes she got a little bit nervous when she did that, because maybe she had prepared enough just for the people who were there, but she didn't want to not invite the guy from the co-op or whoever was there, or friends that happened to come by. But this is what Nanny would do during lunch. She would invite them, but buddy, she would watch that table. And she would especially watch her sons and grandsons as they ate, you know, a big old table. And she would keep an eye on that chicken there or that casserole. And I'm not kidding, if one of the sons or the grandsons was getting too much, she wouldn't hesitate to tell them, well, you think you need that much? You know, she wanted there to be enough to go around. And so take a situation like that and multiply it by 1,000, and that's the situation you have here with Jesus and the disciples. There was a need, people needed to be fed. Jesus is drawing them in with a statement that you need to give them something to eat, knowing that they could do something in this case, but it wasn't enough. And so then he asked this question, how many loaves do you have? Okay, we don't have enough. And then Jesus says, how many loaves do you have? And that's an interesting question now too. It's almost as if Jesus is kind of playing with them a little bit. You give them something to eat. Well, we can't do it. Well, what do you have? How much do you have? That's the key question today. That is the focus, the key question today. And it's a question for them, and it's a question for us. How many loaves do you have? And this is what they had. They had, at least they thought what they had amongst them all, were 5 loaves and 2 fish. And in the account in John, we are told that Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, is the one who's always bringing people to Jesus. He found a little boy in the crowd with a little sack lunch, I guess he had for himself. His mom packed it earlier in the day, and he was carrying it with him as he was traveling. And said, there's this boy with 5 little loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? There might have been enough there for 1 or 2 people, maybe a small lunch, but certainly not enough for 5,000 plus people. Even if they had 500 loaves, it probably would not have been enough for that big crowd. And so let's think about this statement, not enough, not enough. How many loaves do you have? Well, many of us might say, no, I don't have enough. I don't have enough to meet this need. And yet, this is the word for today. And I want it to sink deeply into our hearts. And it strikes at the core of everything related to how God will use me and how God will use you to bless people in this world and make a difference in the world. This is our word for today, more than enough. Last week I asked you to say along with me from Philippians 4:19, all my needs. Okay, I'm going to ask you to say this one with me. Let's say it together now. How much do you have? Let's say it together. More than enough. How much do you have? More than enough. My God shall supply all your needs according to His glorious riches in Christ Jesus. Everything that you need. What do you have? How many loaves do you have? Well, I only have 5 loaves and 2 fish. I certainly don't have enough. And yet Jesus is teaching them, and He is teaching us, that we do have more than enough. Because if you continue to read in the story from Mark chapter 6, we continue to read, and this is what we're told. Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, and taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up into heaven, he gave thanks, he broke the loaves, he gave the loaves to his disciples and set those before the people. He divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and they were all satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish, and the number of men who had eaten was about 5,000. How much do you have? More than enough. Now, there are some commentators out there and some people who believe that this was not an actual kind of miracle, that Jesus actually multiplied, like metaphysically changed the loaves and the fish. There are some who believe that maybe they're out there and there's probably more people who have food, but they're all just kind of hoarding that food and they're not eating it and they're not sharing. They're just thinking about what they have. And because of what Jesus says and because of the actions and because of the generosity of this little boy with his food, that everybody kind of got touched in the heart and then they began sharing, and then finally everybody did that and everybody had enough. Now, I'm going to say this. I'm not saying that it's impossible that's the way it could have gone. I believe Jesus can walk on water. He can multiply loaves and fishes. I personally don't, that's not my take on this, but some people look at this story like that old Russian folktale you remember about the Russian soldier who goes to a village and he's hungry and he knocks on the door and says, "Do you have something I can eat?" And the lady there says, "No, I hardly have anything. I don't have anything to share with you. Everybody here in the village is poor. We don't have enough." And then he thinks a little bit and he says, "Hey, I have a stone. If you have a stone, I know how to make good stone soup." And so you remember the story. He takes the stone and they put the stone in a pot and they start cooking. And then he says, "You know, this sometimes when I make this, it's a little bit better with a few carrots and a few potatoes." And she says, "Well, I have a few carrots and potatoes." And pretty soon the soup is cooking and people in the village are smelling it and people are coming. And they're saying, "What are you making?" "We're making stone soup." And he says, "Well, do you have any turnips? Maybe you can put in this." You know, long story short, you know, they all eat, they're all fed, and the moral of the story is, listen, you don't think you have something to share, you maybe have more to share with others than you think. And that's what I think one of the main lessons right here in this story is with them. And if that wasn't enough, Jesus performs this same miracle, we're told, not the same miracle, but a miracle like it. Both in Matthew and Mark, Jesus proceeds to feed miraculously 4,000 plus people, this time with seven loaves and a few fish. And then when he does that, let me read this text for you on that occasion when that happened. That's in Mark chapter 8. And they're in the boat. Jesus says something. Once again, the disciples are thinking, "Oh, we don't have enough bread." And then Jesus, aware of their discussion, asks them, "Why are you talking and talking about having no bread? Don't you see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears and fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the seven loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" And they answered, "Seven." And then he said to them, "Do you still not understand? Do you still not understand?" And this goes to the question, really, of how we view life, how we view our life in Jesus, how we view the world, how we view the possibilities. If we're willing to see things with a different pair of eyes and stretch our faith and just view the world and view the world in Jesus and for Jesus with the eyes of abundance versus the eyes of scarcity. Focusing not on what we can't do or will never do, but focusing on what can be done because we have enough. God is a God of abundance. You think of Him creating the world, and you think of what He provided, and you think of God's admonition to be fruitful and multiply from the beginning in creation. What He's done for humankind, there is this desire to give and to bless and to share, this idea of abundance. When the Jews are traveling in the wilderness, in that desperate, difficult situation, what does God provide for them? He provides everything they need. There's manna every day given by God for them. He provides. God is a God of abundance. And so how are we viewing the world? How do we view the possibilities? Do we just see problems or do we see possibilities? Do we see what we can't do or do we see what we can do through God? It's an important question. And one of the important applications of this whole idea is found in this little seed right here, that little mustard seed. And Jesus asked another question on another occasion. He says, what's the kingdom of God like? What is God's work and power and presence and His lordship exhibited in this world like? And He said, it's like a little seed, a mustard seed, that's one of the smallest of the seeds, and yet when it's planted and it grows big enough for the birds to nest in it. Small. Don't despise the small things. A cup of cold water, a widow, there at the temple, Jesus points out, that tosses two small coins into the treasury. That was more than anybody else gave. The little things add up. And I will say this about this event on this day. If this little boy's mom had packed a little lunch for him on hundreds of other days, she was doing a good deed and she was sharing and she was serving. And yet most of those days they went by without anything noteworthy or anything stupendous happening in terms of that little boy and his life or her life. And yet on one day she fixed a meal. If he didn't fix it for himself, I'm assuming she made the lunch. On that one day, on this day, she ends up, or they end up, with this small amount feeding this many people, including Jesus. Who would have guessed? And all those little things, they add up. Mother Teresa was quoted on one occasion saying this, I have 3 pennies and a dream from God to build an orphanage. To which somebody said to her, you can't build an orphanage with 3 pennies. To which she replied, I know. But with God and 3 pennies, I can do the impossible. What can we do with that little bit? Today is Mission Sunday, as you know, and the last couple of times on Mission Sunday, we've highlighted one of our ministries that we support, and today is no exception. Today we're going to be talking about Hope for Haiti's Children, and we are honored to have Cedric Boyd, who is on the board of the board at Hope for Haiti's Children, is going to get up and share with us some thoughts about what's going on in Haiti. So Cedric, if you would, make your way up here, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, church.
Good morning.
Oh, good. I love when there's energy. You know, every Mission Sunday, one of our mission representatives comes up here and begins to talk about the work. And they talk about the work in the context of the what. You know, in this series that Grady's had talking about questions, I think it's interesting that whenever we come up, we talk about what's going on in these ministries, what's going on in these missions, right? And basically, we give an update of the mission's activities. So when you say, what's happening with Hope for Haiti's Children? I'm pleased to say right now that Hope for Haiti's Children continues to deliver on the mission that it had established over 25 years ago, which is to train, teach, and nurture poor Haitian children. The simple mission. Every day, all the time. That's what our goal is. And we do it through a number of ways. And you all have seen the slides. And of course, I could have had slides up here with poor, poor Haitian children eating rice from a container to pull on your heartstrings a little bit, because that's in part what we do, right? But it's more important to me for me to touch your mind for a second for the few minutes that I have here today. We help these children by providing food and quality water, clean water. We help them by taking care of orphans who don't have parents, right? We help them by providing quality Christian education. We help them by providing basic health care, and we hope to expand that, right? And we provide it by providing quality spiritual training. Because we want these children to someday grow up to be capable Christian leaders who are able to impact their community, their country, and their church. When you boil it all down, that's what it comes to. But the reality of it is, everything in Haiti is not that great. First of all, there's abject poverty. Now, I grew up with very little, and I didn't know I didn't have much because everyone around me had very little too, Dave. Nobody had anything, so we were rich just like the folks next door who didn't have anything either. But until you experience and see for yourself what poverty on this level is like, you just don't understand it. That continues to be a challenge in Haiti. Right now, they are dealing with political unrest because they can't figure out how to govern themselves. That's been an ongoing challenge for the Haitian people. It's up, it's down, it's up, it's down, now it's down. They can't figure out how to govern themselves. And as a result of that, gangs are proliferating in the major cities. Because in the absence of controls, in the absence of law and order, these people try to take advantage of the system. But even though all these things are happening, our partners in Haiti are doing a fantastic job on delivering the mission of teaching, training, and supporting Haitian children. And thanks to people all across the U.S., donors, supporters, here in Ohio, right here in this church, it's working. So I guess my report to you is that all is well in Haiti for Hope for Haiti's Children. But there's a second question that I think Grady beautifully connected to this. My next thought is, why should you give to missions like Hope for Haiti's Children? Why would you want to give to an organization that's doing things that seem right and so good? And there were two data points that I saw recently that really kind of blew my head off, talking about abundance versus scarcity in the context of helping Haitian children through Hope for Haiti's Children. The first one, we are in the U.S. in the midst of the greatest transfer of wealth the world has ever seen. You probably didn't realize it because it's happening very slowly. But the bubble called the baby boomers, they're now to retirement and beyond. And as a result of that, listen to me clearly, $70 trillion, that's with a T, $70 trillion will be transferred from one generation to the next generation slowly, so you probably don't notice it, but because baby boomers are going through the system. So the question is not, do we have abundance? We have tons We have more than abundance, right? So why should we give to organizations like Oprah Haiti's Children? Here's the second point. There's data, survey data, amongst Christians that say Christians find the greatest joy in their Christian experience by seeing the impact of their faith choices on others. What are you saying, Cedric? I'm saying that when we as Christians, through our faith, help and support others, we get the greatest joy from that. While coming to church and worshiping is a great thing, and fellowshipping with everyone is a great thing, and all that is commanded, so we cannot not do it. But that's not where Christians say they find their joy. Right? That's in keeping with what Jesus says in Matthew 25. You know, what we do for the least of these, how we support those that have very little, it's like we're doing it for Jesus. We cannot ignore the plight of the poor. We should be compassionate and kind and express love for those who have very little. Right? So when you put those two things together, the largest transfer of wealth the world has ever seen in America, and the joy that Christians get from seeing their faith choices acted upon through the support of others, that means that Hope for Haiti's Children and missions like it provide us with an opportunity to do so much more. We do it because we can. We do it because we could. We do it because there's a need. We do it because there's a vehicle called Hope for Haiti's Children that allows us to do that. So on behalf of Hope for Haiti's Children, I want to say thank you for what you've done in the past. I want to say thank you for what I know you will do in the future. There's still work to be done in Haiti for those children. And someday, hopefully, Haiti will be a different place because of the efforts of Christians like those in this room right now who sought to make a difference. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Cedric. All right, I'm going to move us on to a couple of quick points before we leave this morning. First of all, remember this. We're in a partnership with God. And what I mean by that is it's not just about us, you know, collecting money for Hope for Haiti or ministries or our programs or anything like that. The idea is that we are partnering with what we are giving in any number of ways. And I love what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 9. He says, and in the context, he's talking about the giving the Macedonians were doing. It says, now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. It is a privilege and an honor to be able to give financially, but we give in many, many more ways than we give financially. But here's the thing, God multiplies what we do. And we don't have to be hoarders. I don't know how many of you have seen the show Hoarders. It's a very sad show, but in some ways, you know, we may be hoarders of our time, maybe hoarders sometimes of our talents. And God is asking us to stretch, maybe do something a little bit different that will help us grow our faith. And I believe when we stretch and grow and do something beyond what we would normally do, God can take that and help us grow even more. And I stand before you this morning as a witness to that principle. And the sacrifices that others made to help me get to the point where I am in my work and my ministry. I could not afford to go to Lipscomb. This is even before Lipscomb was so expensive. I couldn't afford it. My dad had very little money. I had not saved up money for college. I could only get so much in scholarship money. I could not go there to learn to preach. But the youth minister where I attended said that there was a woman there at the church, an anonymous donor who made a large donation to the church to be used to support a young man who wanted to go off somewhere to preach. And so he approached me after talking with this woman and talking with the elders that gave me the opportunity to take the step to go to Lipscomb. And I can venture to say, if I had not gone to Lipscomb, I would not have met Jeannie. And I would not have been here. I don't know who that woman is. She could have taken that money and I guess gone on a vacation with it. But she made the choice to invest it in kids like me. And so she stretched. You never know what you have in terms of your money, your time, your talent, your resources. And God is calling you to take that step and stretch. How he might use that. How many lows do you have? More than enough. More than enough. If we can help you on your journey, as I always say toward the end of my lesson, we want to be a help. We want to be an encouragement to you. We want to partner with you to help you get to the place where God is calling you to be. And so don't hesitate to reach out to us. Let us know whatever that need is. If you want to commit your life to Jesus, be baptized into him. You want to explore what it means to be a part of this church family and become an active part of this body, let us know. God bless you. Don't forget, how much do you have? More than enough.